Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are on the iTunes search, or you are on iTunes and you are going through the search engine, enter lordgaul, or enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. The iTunes, of course, is the most efficient way to get to the show because it'll just upload to your, it'll automatically upload it to your iTunes podcast area, you know, whenever a new episode comes out. So that's the best way, of course, to get to the episode. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into it. Also for the Twitter followers, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. Basically, I got a lot of news to talk to you about, and then I'm going to return to something that I did before. I feel obligated to make sure that I'm on it with the episodes now because I was so busy in the month of January, and I'm still super busy now getting ready to open up my new gym and all that. But, you know, my big goal as far as getting kickboxing to the people, sometimes it's just about the conversation of fights. And there were a couple of fight events that went down. There were some stadium things that went down. But I'm just going to go ahead and talk about some news. And then I'm going to return to something that I started doing and it didn't continue. And that was when I was breaking down the rankings of the year for different athletes in different weight classes. So I think I'm going to do... I'll decide when I get to it. I think I'll either do light heavyweight or middleweight, but I definitely want to go, you know, down that direction because I haven't been there, you know, in quite some time. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with the, it's not big news if you've been paying attention to the show, but it is big news in terms of you want to know who is the next big athlete out there. You know, you want to know who is the, the next big opportunity for people to make money in kickboxing. And that, of course, would be the news that, and again, you've heard it before, but it's been made, it was announced officially this past week, Bellator is doing their kickboxing, their own kickboxing brand, and then they're still going to mix it. It sounds like they're going to still do MMA and kickboxing, so it looks like they're still kind of, you know, mixing it together on their cards, but they announced it officially. You know, the Dynamite thing was kind of a trial run, but Dynamite, of course, didn't go off as well as you know, we'd like. We've heard it on here many times, but that is what their goal is. They're going to do it. It was already announced before, but I'll go ahead and repeat some of the names. Kevin Ross will be used. Raymond Daniels will be used. And then, of course, the Anastasia Yankova. I mentioned her. I think I said Anastasia. Because it could be. I've heard it announced both. But I believe it's Anastasia. She was one of the women that, of course, and they kind of had her on the camera when they did the Bellator event the other day. They are good athletes to start with. Clearly, it's going to be easier finding Kevin Ross opponents on a regular basis than it will be for Raymond Daniels. I'm hoping that this still allows Raymond Daniels the opportunity to fight for both, meaning that he should be able to, him, Melvin Manhoff, they should be able to fight both kickboxing and, Melvin should be able to fight kickboxing MMA if he wants to keep doing that. Raymond Daniels, he should be able to fight both Glory and for the Bellator brand of kickboxing as well. The only thing that I see is as a little bit of an obstacle, of course, is where they're going to get his opponents from. And it will be a sideshow if they just keep giving Raymond Daniels a bunch of MMA guys. You know, he is going to need to fight world-class kickboxers at some period of time. Now, there's some good athletes out there. There's some good athletes that they could bring in for sure. Russia's full of them. Full of them. They got a lot of athletes. But, you know, a big thing that I really want people to focus on is this is another opportunity for kickboxers to make money. And even though people are saying, you know, you've heard kickboxing's dead, you've heard that, you know, it's not what it was and that kind of deal, that's for people who aren't really in the know or people who just kind of caught on to the casual banter of this is down. The reason why people think, hey, kickboxing is down, for two reasons. One, as I started to say a second ago, they looked at the K1 brand as the driving force to kickboxing. Despite the fact that the K1 brand only had two weight classes, and even, you know, and they were in the lowest weight class, was really TV-based more than it was best fighter in the world. So I'll give you an example. The athletes that they brought in to K1 Max, it wasn't just that they were good kickboxers, but they also had to have a look, you know, like they had an aura about them. You know, it's Mike Zambides is an easy, he got into the K-1 World Grand Prix after, you know, he had been fighting. He got in on his third try. He was, you know, I won't say on his third try, but in their third year. So the first 2 years they didn't use him, and then he emerged, and then he gets the opportunity. He beats Albert Krause, and then they use him in the tournament, and then that's when he loses to Masato. But he is a guy who is considered one of the best kickboxers in the world, and he did it when, you know, they were fighting 10 rounders, you know, so he's used to fighting 10 rounders, no clinch, just boxing in, you know, kickboxing low kicks. He's been in some awesome battles. He truly is one of the all-time greats. But Mike Zambides, it took him a little bit. His power is the thing that got him in, but the look is the thing that got, like, Bukau in, because there were some failed attempts when they used Muay Thai guys originally. They brought in a couple of Thais. Those guys didn't have the it factor that Bukau brought in. So Bukau was used a lot. You know, he had the look and so on. Masato, of course, had the look and so on. Artur Kashinko brought him in, had the look. There was something to who they put out there. Now, again, those guys could fight. So in the end, it actually worked out really well for them for a while, bringing in new young stars that had a look and could sell themselves and so on. But the goal of it was always for it to be a productive TV station that showcased a lot of, you know, athletes that had a look that was, you know, appeasing to a crowd. And of course, the K-1 heavyweights are just, you know, that's how it got started. It got, you know, I've talked about this several times, the idea of bringing in the best fighters in the world. It was something that was kind of, the heavyweights were like, right in the beginning, in the 90s, like, it was when Kakutugi was just so popular in Japan, and, you know, Pride, of course, came towards the end of the later 1990s, but those were the two weight classes, over, you know, 195-pound people and up, and then people who weighed 154 pounds or 70 kgs. That leaves out a lot of fighters. A lot of fighters didn't get the opportunity. A guy like Cesar Cordoba in Spain is right in the middle of that. He's not getting the opportunity to fight in any of those promotions. He's stuck right in the middle. There were a lot of guys like him. Yuri Mess later in his career moved down in weight, but for a while he was like the best guy at 77 kgs, and they didn't have a home for him. So for those who think that it's down, they look at K1, which they probably were looking at wrong the whole time, and then they look at the fight forums, because K1 was huge. They're just... the media that we got, how we got fights, like everybody would sit around and we'd like watch streams from, you know, K1 USA, K1 fans, Kakutugi. We'd watch streams and then we'd comment for days and days and days. And that's kind of how people, like, that was our audience. Those are the people who are into kickboxing. They've all gone, you know, or they're paying attention to MMA or boxing or not combat sports at all, but they're all gone. So people who always thought that the sport was dying, they usually are dead. They usually go off of that. Now, as a person who really pays attention to kickboxing and Muay Thai, as a person who really pays attention to it, I'll tell you this right now. Unchallenged, there are more opportunities for people in kickboxing to make money today than there has been ever in the history of kickboxing. This is not up for contestation. This is not close. You go to the 80s, you had opportunities for guys because, you know, we had the waist-high kickboxing was really popular and so on, whatever. Those guys had opportunities. Those guys got on TV. Nothing like what they have today. Nothing like what they have today. So whether it's, you know, the Bellator opportunity that I'm talking about now, K1 as it exists right now, Glory as it exists right now for its, you know, all of its weight classes, KOK, you know, in Ukraine, excuse me, that's King of Kings, there are more opportunities. And Fusion, there are more opportunities for people to get a check that they could live off of, or, you know, make the time they put in worth it in terms of financial benefit. There's more opportunities right now than there ever has been before. So when I first saw this Bellator thing, that was what I was thinking. At least this means more kickboxers get that opportunity. Denise Kielholz is another name that I saw on the poster that is mentioned for being in this card. She is, of course, she lost her MMA debut, but she still is... She's same thing as Yankova. She's a very attractive woman and she's very skilled. And if they let her do kickboxing too, that means that she can make money at being what she was the best in the world at. She was the best fighter in the world at 126 pounds. She had a kickboxing bout, you know, against Tiffany Van Soest. I think that secured that spot for her. Very, very entertaining fight. And Very technical. Entertaining from a technical point of view. Denise Akil Holtz's battles with Yona Wyman's was much more aesthetically pleasing if you want to see that war. But Denise Akil Holtz's fight with Tiffany Van Soest was technical. It represented the sport well because both girls can fight in the pocket. They can let their hands go. They can, you know, land consistent offense, and it's clean. It didn't get sloppy. It stayed clean the whole time. And then, you know, it had a really strange moment. Tiffany, who's known for spinning things, was not able to get it on Denise, and Denise was able to score one that got her down in the fourth round. Denise Akil Holtz is a star that you want to build behind, in particular if you're trying to be in Europe. She's got a lot of wins over a lot of girls. She's my fighter of the year a couple years ago. She's very skilled and a good person to have on the roster. I'm hoping, I don't see his name here now, but I'm assuming that they're trying to work something out to get him in the card because they just have to. George Petrosian. Originally, I know that it was like in stone that he was going to be on, you know, this card in Italy. They got to figure that out because Giorgio is the man, you know. And now if it's something with Glory where he can't, I mean, we just got to deal with it. But he really is the premier talent in kickboxing still, despite the fact that he's not the title holder. So we'll see what comes from that. Kevin Ross, there are a lot of options that they can use. There's a lot of people, a lot of directions they can go with him because France has got a lot of people around that size. Even if they wanted him to do full rules of Muay Thai, they've got a lot of options for him if they're going to be in Europe a lot. So I'm curious to see what's coming for him moving forward. Joe Schilling, he already had a contract to fight for both Glory and for Bellator. We'll talk about Joe Schilling again in a moment. And then, of course, Carrie Melendez is going to be – I almost view her in a way that UFC is bringing up Sage Northcutt in terms of they've got this young talent that's got really good style and movement and can really kickbox, and they don't have the fights. Now, again, opposition matters, and Carrie was given a girl that she could look good against. But she's still going to have to be moved slow. Don't go throwing her in there with just anybody. There's some talented girls out there. And at 54 kgs, around that weight class, 53, 54, like around there, are some of the best fighters in the world. If you guys heard the last podcast, that is the deepest wealth of talent is there. So definitely curious to see what they do with her moving forward. So she'll probably be brought up slow, be, you know, given the right kind of opposition, some MMA fighters that they get into kickboxing and so on. But eventually it'll be all sideshow if it doesn't turn her into her fighting someone good. So whether she fights Van Soest down the road in kickboxing, or she fights, you know, any of the other elite girls. Even as I say this, she's still years away from a Iman Barlow or Anissa Mexen, like years away from being where they are. But we'll see. I mean, time will tell. But I do really like that they put this together. I'm not one of those people that sky's falling when I see this matchup made, you know, or when I see that, you know, kickboxing's come together and it's not Glory. I do think that it's good. I do think that this is a good opportunity, and I'm curious to see what they do with it. Moving forward, I'm going to go ahead and talk. I'm trying to keep some of the results away. I do want to say thank you to everybody who watched the 2015 kick fighting, the year in kick fighting. Like, I thought that I put a lot of time into the podcast. So I'm always excited when I get to that time of year. I'm going to do a highlight, and I was going through the highlights, and I'm going through all the footage and go, man, this is a big year because everybody and their mom fought this year. You know, it's like there's so many kickboxing opportunities. It really was a lot of fun. I was really, really excited to see people respond to the kickboxing highlight the way they did, that they really enjoyed it. So it's on Vimeo right now. Just put in the 2015 year in kickfighting and it'll pop up. It's a picture of Giorgio Petrosian, and he is kind of facing, like, if you want to see what's on the video, it's a picture of him. He's going to Josh Jouncey. So I'm definitely excited whenever people look that up and they enjoy it. So it means a lot to me for all the well wishes and so on. So I'm going to go ahead and get into something. K1 Global, they kind of retaliated because of another big news that came out this past week. And the week was, or a couple weeks, I should say, but really in this past week, it's really been talked about. The idea that Glory will now be, their undercard will now be on Fight Pass. Now, of course, this has got mixed reviews all over the place. I am a subscriber of Fight Pass, and all it does is make my $10 a month worth more all the time. So I don't watch a lot of their MMA events that they do, those small ones. I don't really pay attention to those that much. But I do pay attention to these organizations that, you know, kickboxing and different places where the undercard has been. And I was like, you know, I'm fine with the whole thing being in one place, just on ESPN. But for whatever reason, as they work it out, they're still on ESPN3, and then they run the second card on ESPN2 on delay. And they still have been able to get okay ratings doing that system, despite the fact that it's not live. But we'll see as we go into the summer with football being gone. We'll definitely be curious to see how things work itself out. I want to see more of these shows. I want to see what ESPN can do with kickboxing, if they could just get into the habit. I mean, it'll be even better when they start playing it live. That's got to be the goal. But I'm excited that the main card is on there. But the undercard being on something that I could watch live and get a hold of right away, that means something to me. So I'm hoping that they stay with that. But at the same time, I can understand that kickboxing, we've always wanted our own identity, and we wanted to be separated from the mixed martial arts community. We want them to appreciate us for being us, not for being something that you do before you fight MMA. And that's always been kind of a big thing with MMA in the last 3 years. That's, I won't say always, but in the last 3 years, I'd say it's something that you will always hear. When someone has success, somebody will usually say to me, how do you think this person will do in MMA? I almost like want to hear the opposite question. How do you think this person would do in kickboxing? You know, but I'm fine with it. I know there's different views on it. I guess it's just about the execution. But I do know that UFC's making a big push for Fight Pass this year. So they're trying to make it as appealing as possible. I already have it. I already enjoy it. So I'll see. I'll see how this fight takes place and how this event is done. And hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. Another thing I want to talk about as far as news in the last few years, the global, K1 Global, who we haven't heard of and from quite some time. I believe the last event they did was, Liverkick posted it, let me guess, because I'm thinking it was the one that Miracle won. Yes, that was the last event they did, was the one that Miracle Crocott won their K1 World Grand Prix, for whatever that's worth. If you look at that field, it definitely wasn't a field that reflected the best fighters in the world. It was an okay field that they put together, though. That they are claiming that they still have the rights to it. Now, for those who don't know the history of it, basically what happened was K1 was running itself into financial trouble. And then after it was getting into financial trouble, they had this moment where they basically tried to sell off, you know, because Simon Roots, him and all his management company, they had most of the fighters on the K1 roster. So then the Glory Crew came, and then they bought that management company and it's Showtime so that they could get the roster so that K1 just had the name. So then at one period of time, it was said that Glory bought something from someone, some representative of K1 Global, and they tried to get the rights of the video, the library, because that's where it's like, that's where people realize it. The library is what the money's in. It's weird. I was watching some documentary on WWE the other day, and they were talking about when the WWF at the time bought WCW, the biggest reason why Vince wanted to do it was because he said he knew the library was going to be worth a lot. In that way, this group was like, all right, K1 as a whole, there's just too many financial holes. There's just too many. It's too difficult. There was a group that tried to buy K1, and then the deal didn't go through. So then the group that got together and bought Glory, they tried to get the athletes, and then they tried to go back, and they said that they paid something to get the library rights. I remember when it came out. And in my mind, it's like, wow, that's a weird thing to sell. To this moment, there seems to be two different K1 entities running. And K1 Global was the one that, you know, did that MMA event, kickboxing event in Croatia with, you know, the MMA star Mirko Krokop. And the K1 Japan that seems to be continuously doing a good job of running shows in Japan and in working on their new smaller weight athletes, they seem to be their own entity too. And they seem to also have claim to the library because they have their own YouTube page and they continue to post out all the great fights and all that's on YouTube right now. So clearly what's going to happen next is, where's this stuff going? You know, where are these videos going? Because right now I could go to watch any of that old stuff. So if you want to start collecting video and you're worried about it going away, I won't blame you at all if you jump on, like, trying to find stuff on YouTube for your collection right now, because we don't know where it's going to go. In the end, UFC might have the rights to just play it, but they may not have the exclusive rights to keep other people from playing it. And that's what seems like K1 Global is trying to fight. They're trying to say that they've got exclusive claim to that, but it just doesn't seem to be true. As I look at it, as I look at what K1 Japan's doing, the K1, with the official website, they're posting old video all the time and new video, and K1 Global is just kind of sitting there quiet since Mirko, won that tournament, returned to the UFC, then retired. They're just sitting here chilling, and we haven't heard anything of them until they heard about this deal. So maybe they're popping up because they're trying to get a percentage of the money, or you're supposed to buy that from us. We'll see in time, but definitely a weird situation. Not one that I'd be too inclined to put much stock in until I see how it's resolved. Next fight I'm going to talk about is not going to talk about the fight in terms of a breakdown, but Joe Schilling had been posting several things about disputes with Glory, how he wasn't contacted, contract things. He's bringing it up because it was mentioned that people asked why he wasn't on the USA card. And lo and behold, he's now on the USA card. It was announced a couple weeks ago that Joe Schilling is going to be going against Mike Lemaire. Lemaire is a guy who, again, had a great start. He was, won his debut. They thought that he was going to be a guy that they could build, and they gave him Wayne Barrett, a guy who didn't have that many fights. Wayne Barrett, stopped him. And then they started moving behind Barrett, and Wayne Barrett had a pretty good run. Lemaire went ups and downs as far as wins go. Got some good wins in Muay Thai online fight, just, serviceable, keep myself active wins, and some tough fights there. And I think his last Glory victory, if I'm remembering correctly, was against Jacoby. So I think that if I look at him and, where he is, right now, he's a good opponent for Schilling, who's coming off of a pretty good win over Willness. That's a solid win. I think that that's an interesting fight. I'm curious to see what happens moving forward. I'm not going to break the fight down. I just want to say Schilling went through those contract disputes, and it seems like it worked out, and maybe his contract enables him to fight in both organizations as it did before when he was with Bellator and working with Glory Kickboxing. So hopefully moving forward, we'll get more of him on TV. Super Combat announced their 2016 season, but the reason why I'm bringing it up is because something interesting was announced with it. They're doing a USA versus the rest of the world card, and they are doing it in San Juan, Puerto Rico. This surprised me. I'm not a guy who's surprised often, but for them to take a kickboxing brand to a boxing and, baseball, I guess U.S. province, I don't know if I could use the word country officially, but I'll say country in case I offend people. But, Puerto Rico, of course, is known for being it's every once in a while here in the States, we'll hear news that they ask Puerto Rico if Puerto Rico wants to be a state or not. And they just like being just kind of USA territory. So it's won't get into the politics of that. But I will get into Super Combat coming over to the States for the first time, North America for the first time that I know of, and then doing a card down there. Daniel Sam versus Catalin Marzano is going to be the main event there. I like it. I like that they're doing it. I think it's cool. I'm hoping that the fans come out and support. I'm hoping that people who've never heard of it before go, I'll go check that sport out. Now, again, they better find some local kickboxers. They better find something. You can't just come out here thinking that they're going to get, even if they get some MMA guys to do kickboxing, they need some local people, local talent to come in and be a part of this. Might want to get some reggaeton, in between fights. Might want to get some performer. They got to do some things to make this successful because they're going to a place that's not necessarily known for, like I said, kickboxing. They could do that and, Texas and get away with it because we're a combat state. We've got a lot of different things. California and get away with it. It's a tough draw to try to pull that out in Puerto Rico. So we'll see if that happens. But I'm excited because I do think it's a pretty cool thing to try to go there and so on. So, there's a lot of fights coming up. I don't want to get into them all. I want to save next week. My show 200 is going to literally have a Infusion breakdown, a Glory breakdown. It's just a line fight is that Friday too, if I'm remembering correctly. So much is going on next week, and it's not my 200th show. It's just my iTunes 200 show. For those who've been following me, I used to do this on Mega Upload, and I would just do an episode and upload it, and then people could get a hold of it. And that's how this show started for like half a year, and then finally I was able to figure out how to get on iTunes, and we've been on here ever since, which is good because, you know, over the years, the guy who ran up Mega Upload was like, you know, put in prison or something like that. So, other thing that I'm going to just bring up vaguely, Robin van Roosmalen won his MMA debut. You know, it's just more money for a combat, you know, a guy who is a prize fighter. So, you know, I want him to kickbox. I think that's where he is, you know, one of the better fighters in the world. That's where I think his skill set shows the most, and he's a very entertaining fighter. But got to make money. Got to make money. I got no problem with that. Going to go ahead and go into the rankings, as I mentioned before, and I started to do this, but I didn't finish it, so that's why I'm returning to it. I think it's easier for me to just start working backwards now, so I'll go ahead and start going from heavyweight back to the smaller weight classes. I believe when I did this before, I know that I did the featherweights. I'm going to go ahead and start with heavyweight and go backwards. So, first and foremost, Rico Verheerven is the unchallenged best fighter in the world at heavyweight. Now, won't say unchallenged all the way because Andre Grzmacek beat him last year. But I do think that he has the clear best resume. He's got the best wins. He's holding the title that we recognize as the best heavyweight fighter in the world. And he is a product of the evolution of this sport. And I've mentioned it on the show before. For those who haven't heard, you'll hear me say it, you know, hear me say it now. For those who've heard me say it before, you'll hear me say it again. One of the most important things about Rico Verheerven and this era of kickboxing in general is they are much more technical all around than the heroes of old. I'm not saying that the heroes of old were not technical, but not all the time, because there are some fights where Ernesto Hoost put on some beautiful kickboxing. There's some fights where Alexei Ignashov has put on some beautiful kickboxing. Rico Verheerven reminds me of the successful version of what we were supposed to get from, you know, the Red Scorpion. Like, he is technical, smooth, but the only thing is Ignashov started off with more KO pop in the beginning, whereas Rico didn't have that. But Rico went through the struggles. I mean, I watched this guy get stopped by lower opposition, but he just kept getting better, kept getting better. And the next thing you know, it all paid off, and he's one of the best fighters in the world. But the most important thing about Rico is, even as a heavyweight, you can show someone who's never seen this sport before Rico Verheerven's performance, in particular the performances with Adebuyi, and you would be like, that's awesome. That's technical. That's it. A new person would be like, that's what the sport is supposed to look like. It's supposed to look like this kind of athlete. So definitely want to make sure that people know Rico Verheerven, you know, and his skill set is smooth and clean throughout. Whereas when I look back at some of those fights in the late 90s, where we got some of the best kickboxers in the world, and some of those battles were super wild. Super wild, wild swings, a lot of holding. Not all of that stuff was technically clean. Rico Verheerven is his performance, I mean, his last fight with Benjamin Adebuyi in particular, just absolute execution, that finish with a starching right hand. Good stuff there. Rico Verheerven is your best fighter in the world in the heavyweight division. Benjamin Adebuyi, of course, is a talented guy who is getting W's over everybody, not named Rico Verheerven. And he still has the tools to get it done, but Rico has his numbers. You know, he can beat him in the kickboxing. So Benjamin's got to figure out the balance of being able to kickbox Rico and, you know, stay away from the power, because Benjamin's still very hittable. But he's another guy, I mentioned it before, brought up really well under Super Combat, came up, had a loss, avenged that loss, kept developing good kickboxing craft, keeps getting good wins. The Jafar Wellness win was very, very close, but that's a good win for him. I like that he stays busy with Super Combat in his off season. He's getting better all the time. He's a good talent. He just can't beat the number one guy. Jafar Wellness surprised me. And the reason why I say he surprised me is because I always thought that Jason Wellness was the better of the two. I thought that Jason Wellness had the most crack because he throws really hard. I thought that Jafar Wellness didn't have the KO power to move forward in the kickboxing sport. I thought that there were some wins that he could have, and that would be the end of it. But he's got wins over Andre Grzmacek, He won the Kunlun heavyweight tournament last year. He, you know, was another... Ben Edwards has always struggled with the low kicks, but Jafar Wellness came in, put in work, got a low kick stoppage there. You can make the argument that Wellness beat Adebuyi. He really turned himself around and is having a great run as a kickboxer, doing very well for himself. He is a guy to pay attention to, and it's weird because he doesn't have KO pop in his hand, but he can kickbox. So we'll see more from him moving forward. He'll be, you know, around the top five for a while, but he is definitely a guy who I do think is a product of his era, because I think that he would have really, really struggled even with the elite kickboxers in the, you know, early 2000s. So even if we were to go before Semi Schilt, he would have struggled with some of those guys. I could picture a clearly Roman Majowski. You still had Ernesto Hoost around doing work. You still had Ray Seffel around. I think those guys would have gave Wellness some trouble. But man, Wellness is, he had a really good last year. One of the more underrated years from kickboxing point of view. His 2015, the loss to Adebuyi kind of covered the fact that he really did have a really good run. So definitely pay attention to Wellness moving forward. Brian Doze is a guy who, you know, as I look at the liver kick rankings, I've always been, he's a strange one to place, because of course, it's funny because he won the Kumite, blood sport, the actual Kumite does exist out there, and Brian won it. Doesn't exist in the TV form of it, which is a shame because the TV form was just awesome. But man, it's crazy because he's put together some good kickboxing wins, but I do think that he's another person that's a product of this era. I do think that in total, it's a down era in heavyweight kickboxing because the light heavyweight division is so strong. But like it's and those light heavyweights used to have to be heavyweights. That's why if you were to combine heavyweight and light heavyweight right now, I'd say we have a really solid technical group of fighters. Top to bottom, I'd say we have that. But because they're separated now with the light heavyweight division, I look at them and I go, man, Brian Doze is kind of in this position based off of this not being a very strong era right now. But he's got some solid wins, and he's an entertaining fighter. So far, of the guys that I've mentioned, three of the four, and now I'm going to have to say four of the five, shoot, I can even go down further, seven of the ten on this list are Dutch-based trained fighters. So Brian Doze, he'll keep fighting, he'll keep winning. He needs to get on a glory roster so that people can see him fight more. They need to see him against elite competition, and then that way people can pay attention and follow him. Jamal Ben Sadiq, I never know what to think here. Anderson Broderick Silva was beating him handily, and then all of a sudden he was able to land that crack. You know, he can punch. He's still got a heavy punch, not necessarily a clean crack. And what I mean by that is this. The way Bob Sapp punches is heavy. The way Rico Verheerven scored a punt, you know, over Adebuyi was power. It's crack. It's turning the knuckles over. It's being able to drop people. It's a different type of punching. And I think Sadiq punches heavy. And sometimes he can land the right kind of shot. Now, he is not, I mean, it gets as ugly as it can be, and I've always been weird about him because I'm like, this dude lost to Peter Aerts when Peter Aerts was like 78 years old, but Ben Sadiq, after some, you know, some losses and being kind of in the middle of the pack and losing Ben Edwards and stuff like that, he's kind of quietly been building himself back. You know, he had the two wins in glory last year. He'll get used a lot again because the matchmaker used to run the gym that he was at, but, he's going to keep moving, but he's another one of those guys where it's like, and I'll just be honest, if there's someone who is critical of kickboxing technique, they're talking about a Jamal Ben Sadiq style of guy. Because sometimes, I mean, I thought that he did a good job of like kickboxing when he went against Remy Bonjasky, who's older, but he did a good job of hands up. He played a kick counter game. Whenever Remy would kick him, he'd catch the kick and he'd fire the kick back because he was so much bigger and stronger. He was able to play the bully well, and he was able to get a victory in that fight. But since then, I thought that he's, you know, he loses it. And he just tries to club people out of there sometimes, and it worked against him with Peter, but it works most of the time. And struggle when he tried to do most of the time against elite opposition, because it doesn't work against elite opposition. You got to have some technical there. So I thought Jamal Ben Sadiq was going to get the next title shot. It's going to someone else. But I am glad that he's at least keeping himself active, and I'm hoping that he works on becoming the kickboxer that he was in the Rumi fight. He showed me something in the Rumi fight. He's not showed me that much since it, but he can still punch. Anderson Broderick Silva is weird to me because he is, I mean, he's got some wins over Haggis. He's got some, you know, good kickboxing outings. Very close to beating some of the other guys on this list. He's got some victories that makes you think, man, he's right there. He's got the skill set to make you think, man, he's right there. And then he'll just have some head-scratching loss, and you won't know. There's no shame in losing to Daniel Guida, but, like, it's just some of his wins are like, man, this guy's the truth, and some of his losses are like, man, this guy. So we'll see more coming from him. He's not training in Holland as he did back in the past, not that I know of. I think he's mainly based in Brazil again, but once upon a time he was birthed and still probably still goes back, and he trains a lot in the Holland kickboxing scene. And by birth, I just mean his skill set was honed and the opportunities for him to make money as a prize fighter and move his career was done in Holland. Anderson Broderick Silva sits at 6. Hezdy Higgins is a weird situation because Hezdy is still got the cakes looming over his head. For those who don't follow kickboxing or haven't been following it like crazy, once upon a time, and if you watch my kickboxing documentary, you'll see something on this. Hezdy was a guy who was known in the kickboxing community as he's a tall athlete. He had the really good fight with Sammy Shelton in terms of he dominated the third round so much that, you know, he felt like he at least earned an extra round. He did lose the first two rounds, but, you know, he's talking about it like he'd won the fight. But he dominated the third round against Sammy Shelton. He's tall, 6'6", real strong. He is the husband of Denise Akilholtz. She's now Denise Akilholtz Hezgis. And he had this really crazy situation with his previous relationship in his old house where the cops thought that he had something to do with some sort of drug deal. So they broke into his house. They made a big scene of it. It was all over the news. Dragged out, you know, kid pushed on the floor. Like, it was a big, scary situation where he's getting arrested in front of his family. And then, like, a lot of people in the kickboxing community were like, not this guy. Like, you guys messed up here. Like this wasn't the guy. Now, I don't know which is true or false about it, but I do know that so many people were like, I know as a fact it's not Hezdy. There are some people that are guilty, but I know it's not Hezdy. And again, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But, I don't know the situation. I wasn't in on everything. But I do know that there's a good amount of people who came to his defense. And there are a couple people out there like, yeah, Hezdy's guilty. But I do think the majority of the feedback that I got was, this, not this guy. But anyways, it still looms over his head. But whatever reason, he's been able to travel and fight. He had a good run in Kunlun last year, got a lot of victories there. As I mentioned before, he was in glory, got some good wins in there. Had a really strange fight with Benjamin Adebuyi, where he fought him really, really close, almost won that fight. Ended up losing. Hezdy also, if I'm remembering correctly, lost to Errol Zimmerman in glory, if I'm remembering correctly. But, like, he's still a good long kickboxer. He's quick, got good combination to low kick flow, one of the better low kick whips in the heavyweight division because he commits to it. It's not like it's a super, you know, it's not Ernesto Hoos style, but it comes clean and consistently. So we'll see more from Hezdy moving forward. Andrei Kuznetsov is a guy who no one knew about last year until the upset win over Rico Verhoeven. Clearly the upset of the year in the heavyweight division. You know, not my upset of the year. That was Bukow. Kuznetsov's victory would have come in second, a close second, because Verhoeven was the man. Now, of course, a lot of things came out afterwards. Verhoeven had a child on the way. A family member just passed. He had it tough. But a lot of those things go into the fight world. Andre played smart, looked for his opportunity, was able to drop Rico twice in the second, and all of a sudden people were paying attention to him. Had a pretty good run in the tournament that they put together for Kunlun, lost to Jafar Wilnes, but all in all, he put himself on the map by beating Rico Verhoeven. Now, this is kickboxing, and the way these rankings work, and this is how I should go off of rankings, this is for anybody who's not used to rankings, don't look at it as 100%. The distance between 4 and 6 is miles away. That's not how you should look at rankings. All you should look at when you look at rankings is you can make an argument for these, you know, 10 athletes to be amongst the names of the best in the world. And how you rank them between 7 and 6, 7 and 1, doesn't mean that 7 is significantly less than the person who's number 2. Or, you know, 3 is significantly better than the person that's number 10. Doesn't mean that at all. All it means is if you were to take a picture of what the kickboxing scene in the world looks like at that moment, the boxing scene or the MMA scene, if you take a picture of it, you can make an argument for these 10 individuals being in these positions. That's it. So please don't feel the need to pull out knives because once upon a time, 7 beat 2, so why is, you know, 2 ranked ahead of 7? It's not necessarily the way that works. It just means that the resume put together by the person sitting in 2 gives them an argument for being there. And then the resume of the person sitting at 7 does not give them the same argument. And that's all it is. So, moving forward, Grzmacek, he sits well in this spot. And I think that, you know, again, he's a Russian, or kind of, I won't say officially Russia. I don't know if that's the country. I didn't get his 100% country of origin, but I know he's from like that old Russia area because there's all those breakoffs. But I do actually think he is from Russia. But he's a talent, and I do want to see more from him down the road. He, in the same situation as Doz, going to have to get some glory bouts. Like, that's important for moving their career and having them mentioned. Zabit Samadov is a light heavyweight, but because he's got the win over Badahari, and he's been campaigning bigger lately, he is, I mean, he's getting kickboxing opportunities. It seems like every Middle Eastern promotion that comes and goes in the Dubai area, they use Zabit Samadov. And it's so crazy that he is where he is, because I've always saw him as a guy who was probably going to be around that 15 to 20 range if you do rankings. I thought that he'd sit there forever. Every once in a while, he's going to beat people because of his movement and his overhands, and kind of has these aggressive moments where he throws his overhands. And, of course, the fights with Badahari just strange, because it's like Badahari dominated the first two, and then the last one, he just kind of, you know, wing those big shots over the top, and then eventually Badahari, you know, was able to, you know, was stopped by them. But Zabit's got the right kind of aggression, and, you know, he's got some guys behind him. He's made a good resume, and the Badahari victory matters. So he is going to continue to fight and look for opposition to compete against. They're not always going to be great. I believe that he, his last outing was a couple guys, you know, a guy brought in for him to beat who hadn't fought, you know, kickboxing in a while. I'm just not remembering off the top of my head. I believe it was Peter Graham. I'm almost certain Peter Graham was the guy brought in. But again, not a guy who's been active at the top. Zabit Samadov, I would rather him be at light heavyweight in the picture with Saki and Kalivari and Vakadov and Bazidi and Younga and so on. I'd rather him be in that conversation. But he is where he is. And I definitely think that he is a guy to pay attention to. But because he can make so much, you know, so much money, or at least good enough money, you might not see him in glory fighting the best in the world, which is a shame. Last guy on the liver kick ranking list is Badahari at 10. And I do believe that Badahari has the ability to beat everybody in this list by KO. No question about it. And has beaten a lot of the guys on this list by KO. You know, he's got victory over Silva. Got victory over Zabit Samadov. Silva fought him very well. I got him. It's got to be mentioned. Silva did fight him well, but got victories over Murad Bazidi. He's got some elite victories here. Now, of course, the talk is that he's going to retire, which I do not believe. If he retires, I mean, I wish him all the best as he moves on and so on. But this guy he's one of those athletes that's always got somebody around him, somebody kind of hanging with him, saying something to him and so on. And he tries to keep a core group. Him and Mike, Mike Pastaneer, Mike's gym, they seem to have a good relationship. It's the longest he'd been with a trainer in his life, because he'd been at a couple of gyms. I believe he started at Moosehead Gym, and then he moved on to Tom Harnick, and then he, of course, ended up with Mike after the loss to Peter Graham, of all people. So I think that you look at that and the relationship that he's had, and as long as he's been there, he's been in the sport for a while. He's not old. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's 28, 29, maybe he's 30 now, but I think he's 29. He could still make a run if he signed with Glory. I would not rule him out for beating any of those guys. And I always say this, one of the best technical kickboxing performances that I've ever seen, as far as heavyweight movement and effective offense and getting the stoppage, because I'm really, really big on stoppage. Badahari has put some of those types of performances together, but none more clear than the fight with Glavio Fitoza. That is just some of the best kickboxing that you will ever see from the heavyweight division. It is a clean destruction of quick jab, low kick, hook, low kick, quick 1-2 switch kick. Like, it's just cross switch kick. It's so fast. And all of a sudden, he scores the kick, gets him in trouble, does the peel on the ropes, gets him, you know, a couple of barrages, and he finishes it. But, like, the kickboxing is so clean. And when I watch that version of Badr Hari, I'm like, this dude is unstoppable, you know. And, again, that's like 6-7 years ago. But it just never came together for him full. And I still believe he's the biggest star in the heavyweight division. Rico Verheeven, of course, is making a name for himself. Big pop from the Dutch crowd when kickboxing returned last month to Amsterdam. But, man, Badr Hari, he's got a huge following. He's got the right type of fight style in terms of if it gets reckless, it gets reckless. Because the fight with Ismael Lant, things are going his way. He's scoring downs, gets caught with a bodacious shot by Ismael Lant, gets up, keeps fighting, gets a stoppage later. That's why you love Badr Hari. He's got that in his history. A guy who's been dropped before, who's got up. Ruslan Karev, same thing. Dropped, gets up, stops him right afterwards. He is a special guy to watch. Like, you watch him and you feel it. And that crowd when he returned and he fought Tony Gregory, and I was there in France when that went down, and I'm like, man, this guy is still a huge star. This guy is still, and he could go back to France and still have that kind of draw because there's such a huge Moroccan community. Badr Hari is still an elite fighter, and if he walks away, I wish him all the best. I do not think that he's walking away. I do think that there's a chance that he's going to come back. And if Glory signs him, Glory's got to do an event with him and a couple of the other stars in Morocco. Somebody's got to do it. Someone's got to do it. He'll be such a huge draw there. It'll be such a big scene. I'm excited about his future if he stays and he gets around the right people. With that said, he's got prison term. He's got to finish. They gave him time served. I think he still has to go back and do 12 months. And I'll never forget how significant his body change was from being in prison, because he was lifting all the time. He was a specimen. You look at some of the video of his training before both of that, because he had back-to-back K1 World Grand Prix where he was the runner-up. So if you look at his body in the Remy fight, and you look at his body in the Silt fight, just a different dude. Just a different dude. So time, inactivity, the prison runs, they're all showing their effect in Badr Hari. But man, he can still put it together as an athlete. And now I feel like I'm starting to talk about him like I talked about Ignashov all those years. If this just happened, if you just put it together, if you just did this, you'll be champion again. Because that's how I felt about Ignashov until he was like 38. Because he was such a talent when he was younger. So that's the heavyweight list. I will return to this, probably not next week, because next week is going to be a super full show because so many people, everybody's getting punched in the face next weekend. So I want to do my best to, you know, keep bringing you guys kickboxing, telling you, do previews, really sell the sport well. And I will return to liver kick rankings, I think, in 2 weeks after that. Just depends on, you know, because I got to do the results show the week after that. So 2-3 weeks down the road, you'll see me come back, and then I will talk about the light heavyweight division. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you guys for following the sport. Make sure you watch these events, and you will hear me again on Thursday or Wednesday. And on those days, I'll give you preview shows for what's coming up. So thanks again for listening. God bless, and everybody have a good one. Peace.